Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 165 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley and this is like the good old days. I might not be quite in the same room, but I'm in the same city and I can see you through the glass, David Cameron
Yes,
Walker.
Good to have you back
this
down
is,
here.
This is kind of, I've forgotten what this feels like.
They've hot, not, I
yeah,
imagine.
They've, yeah. not, they've not changed the aircon since. Yeah. It is an absolute sauna in here. Anyway, great to be on. I'm back in London. What have I missed?
What have you missed? What, a lot, actually.
Yeah, there's been a lot happening
in the Football League, isn't there?
In fact, it's been so long since we've done a show that the entire Football League's rebranded. it's
yes.
called something else, and yeah. we will discuss that a little bit later on. Various managers have come and gone. Chris Ramsey at QPR.
Yep, gone.
He's gone. Chris Powell at Huddersfield.
How long did we think that was going to... I mean, honestly, Neil Warnock turns up as your executive first-team consultant.
Yeah.
Ramsey gets sacked a week later, and Neil, well, I didn't... You know, I was going to just coming in to help, but, you know, well, if you're... You know, well, Chris, if I must...
Chris Powell's gone as well at Huddersfield. Yep. I've gone the German route.
David Wagner
is correct. Richard Money gone at Cambridge. Russ Wilcox gone at York. That Northampton court case...
They're hanging on.
Held off for now.
Postponed, yep.
Hanging on. And the most important thing of all, your 30th birthday, how did it go? Everyone wants to know.
It went very well.
It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, as we know, my actual 30th birthday today was spent in this studio,
I
wasn't it?
The party.
We did one of our last episodes. But
the party
was good. We had a little football tournament in the day.
Yes.
I didn't win.
No.
My team came fifth out of sixth.
No change there.
Yeah.
And I heard you had a particularly poor night at the quiz as well, the big football manager quiz.
It was a disaster. And we usually do quite well, but okay, we were like 22nd out of 30.
That's poor.
Really poor.
We should...
there are no Football League questions, that's why.
Yeah. We should pass on our best wishes to Phil Gartside, the Bolton chairman.
Yes.
Who was announced yesterday as we record this on Tuesday. He's in a critical condition, very seriously ill. The club's up for sale and, yeah, they've brought in, I think it's Birch, I've forgotten the first name, Mr. Birch. Trevor Birch is coming in to oversee... things off the field and speak to investors who want to invest in the club. Maybe there will be a new owner.
Well, it looks like
the Macron Stadium.
It may well be comprised of a consortium.
Yes.
Headed up by former Bolton and Wimbledon striker Dean Holdsworth.
Yes.
And involving in some way, shape or form, although I'm not sure financially, but certainly involving perhaps as part of the deal to maybe fight at the Macron, Amir Khan.
I was reading
Bolton
this
fan,
today.
Local hero.
Well, I watched that one with... Keenly, watch this space.
Well, they're in trouble. They've got £173 million in debt, aren't they?
Yeah, it's not
so
the best,
it's not
it?
A good situation at the moment at all. They obviously need some progress.
They do. So later on, we will discuss the rebranding of the Football League to the English Football League, and in particular, that new logo. So that's going to come up later. Also, we're going to speak
Nothing quite gets people annoyed more than a logo change, does it?
No. Our thoughts on the logo later. Also, we're going to be speaking to John Norman, who is usually, by day, TalkSport's cricket correspondent.
But we know cricket on this show.
Why not? I love my cricket. Anyway, he's going to come on to talk about, not about England's one-day series against Pakistan, but about Fulham, because Fulham are his team. He's a regular down at Craven Cottage to get a fan's perspective on what's been going on there. The departure recently of Kit Simons there. On the verge, we think, of appointing a new manager. We'll discuss the candidates and that a little bit later. But first, we're going to start at Ewood Park, because Blackburn Rovers, I think it's, what, 7 managers in 7 years now after the departure of Gary Bowyer, who I think I said at the start of the season, I've heard an interview with him on 5 Live at the start of the season, came across brilliantly.
Mm.
Oh, he's got a lot of time for him, but
I think
just
he leaves
not,
with his head held high,
yeah, it's
to
just
be honest.
Not quite worked so far this season. Only 3 wins for Rovers, and him and his coaching staff, Terry McPhillips, Craig Short, Tony Grant, John Keeley, all released by the club. He'd been in charge since May 2013, and the new man there is the former Norwich and Aston Villa manager Paul Lambert, who's taken over at Blackburn. And a little bit earlier on, to discuss this and the whole situation at the club, we spoke to Paul Wheelock, who is the Rovers reporter for the Lancashire Telegraph. And I started by asking Paul what he made of the decision to bring in Paul Lambert.
I think it's a good appointment. You know, there are a lot of good managers out there available at the moment, and I think Paul Lambert's right at the top of that list of those good managers. You know, he led Norwich to back-to-back promotions from League One to the Premier League, so he's shown he can do it at the Championship level. The jobs he did previous to Norwich were for Wickham and Colchester, and they didn't want him to leave. And even at Aston Villa, I know by the end, you know, it was a disappointing end to his spell there, but in his first two seasons he did well. And you know, he got a new contract, so yeah, I think it's a bit of a coup for Blackburn, this.
What was the reaction from the majority of the fan base when Gary Bowyer was finally relieved of his duties?
It was a bit of a mixture, really. I think there was sadness there because Gary did a really, really good job, and it was a really tough job he had. You know, when he came into the club on a permanent basis in May 2013, the club was a bit of a circus, and he got it quietened down, he stabilised it, and in the first season only missed out on the playoffs by a couple of points. The second season was a bit of an underachievement because they finished, I think it was 9 points away from the playoffs, even though they had Jordan Rhodes and Rudy Gestede, but by that stage the embargo had come into play. And then this season, I think everyone accepted it was going to be a struggle, but I didn't think people expected it to be as much of a struggle in terms of results. So there may have been people thinking it was the right time, but even when he went, there was a lot of gratitude for what he'd done.
Yeah, I think he very much had given Paul Lambert and the new team a good solid foundation to build on, and I think there should be reason for optimism now, really.
Yeah, definitely. There's no question in my mind that Rovers are in a stronger position, certainly on the footballing side of things, now than when Gary first came in on a permanent basis. Probably you look at the position in the table and you go, how is that so? But he's got a good group of players, he's left a good group of players behind, the good characters, and they've actually performed a bit better than the table suggests this season. But obviously it's all about actually getting the wins on the board. And whereas when Gary took over the club, there were a lot of players who were on a really big wage package who had no future or didn't really want a future at the club, and that's different now. So I think Paul's coming in. It's a tough job, but you know, it's got fairly solid foundations on the football side.
Where are we at the minute, Paul, with the Venkies and all the kind of off-field distractions that there were at a certain point? Is that all calmed down now? Does it feel like a bit more of a stable club?
Oh yeah, unquestionably, and I'd say Gary plays a big part in that, you know, in stabilising it all. And you know, they've paid the price for the way the club was run under their watch in the first few years, first 2.5 years particularly. But they're continuing to, you know, to put the money into the club. Obviously, they've had to pay off Gary and his backroom staff, and they've brought in Paul and a really experienced coaching team. And you know, there is hope they'll get out of this embargo, and then hopefully Paul will have a bit of money to spend. So you know, they're still here, they're sticking in it. And even though, you know, the rain hasn't gone as the way I'm sure they would have expected, and certainly the way the fans would have liked it to have gone, this disappointment of Paul has gone down well.
Just looking at the sort of squad that Lambert inherits, there are some good players in there, but really it is all about Jordan Rhodes still, isn't it? They're very reliant on him for the goals.
For goals, yeah, unquestionably. But Jordan would be the first one to say, you know, he doesn't get his chances without the creating, and they've been created for him. And there's players like Ben Marshall and Craig Conway in there who are good, really good Championship wingers. Tom Lawrence has come on loan from Leicester and done really well. I can see his future being in the Premier League. And then defensively wise, I think they've got a lot better this season. I think they've got 6 clean sheets, which is one of the highest amount in the division. It's just that they've not been ruthless enough at times in games, and that really, there's been too many draws. That was probably one of the biggest problems of Gary's tenure, certainly this season. There were just too many draws.
And if Paul wants to make any additions to the squad, obviously he's going to have to wait a little bit until that transfer embargo situation is resolved. Are we close to getting some progress with that?
Well, Rudy Gestede and Josh King and Tom Kearney were all either sold or, you know, they received fees for them in the summer. And what we were told, and what we were only told about a month ago, was that they still needed another sale, I think around 5 million or just under 5 million to get out of this embargo definitely in January. But it's since come to light that, or the since claim from the club, that they are actually trying to work a way out of it without actually having to sell a player, and they're doing that along with the Football League. It's not something they're going to spring on the Football League. It's something actually they're working with them. if they were to come out of it in January, I'm not sure that Paul Lambert would be able to spend the money, you know, say like Kenny Dalglish enjoyed under Jack Walker, but it would give him a bit of wriggle room, and you know, that would help the squad if he could do that.
In terms of Lambert, it's a bit of a strange one, his sort of career over the last few years. He had such a good spell at Norwich, double promotions, got them in the Premier League, went to Villa and everyone thought he was on the up, and he's had a really, really tough few years. You know, are you slightly concerned by the way it went at Villa? And a lot of Villa fans, I notice, have been you know, not too complimentary about him since he's left.
No, far from concerned, really. He just looks a bit of a poison chalice, Villa, and you've got to say, since he's left, I know Tim Sherwood helped them keep them up, but you know, look where the position they are in the table, and they had a lot of money to spend in the summer. You know, Benteke, I know a lot of money came from Benteke for $32.5 million, but Paul Lambert had brought him in for $7 million. So at that time, he kept them in the Premier League for two successive seasons. He was awarded a new contract in his third and final season, but obviously results went against him and he eventually lost his job. No, I think if you look on his CV as a whole, I think it's a good appointment, definitely, by Blackburn. I think, of course, it didn't end the way he wanted at Villa, but across his career, he's done a good job wherever he's been.
I think you're potentially getting a better Paul Lambert than, you know, than the one that started the job at Villa 2 years ago.
Looks like a different man at the minute.
Certainly.
Since he's got rid of the beard.
Aesthetically speaking, yeah, for sure. But, you know, he didn't have the best of times there at Villa, but as you say, there's been quite a few managers there who haven't managed to get it to work. And in his period of downtime, really, since he's had a job, he's been to Real Madrid, Munich, Dortmund, all over the place to sort of study coaches and take in new methods and stuff. So that bodes well, I think.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, he sounded and looked refreshed at his press conference, his first press conference on Monday. Everything he said has gone down really well with the Rovers supporters. And yeah, you know, the fact that he's gone out there and expanded his horizons and listened to some of the top coaches in the game, I'm sure should bode him well. But yeah, that was the main thing, you know. He looked really refreshed, and then by the time at the end of his Villa, maybe he wasn't enjoying it. And he did say these 9 months out of the game are probably the best thing that has happened to him. So, touch wood for Blackburn, he'll reap benefits of it.
Cracking first fixture as well, Preston away on Saturday. Win there would be a good way to get him on side with the fans.
Yeah, definitely. Well, as I say, I'm really not trying to bang the drum for him here. The fans are completely behind him already. The reaction to that has shown it. They're really happy with his appointment. I think there's 5,500 going to Preston on Saturday. Preston, to be fair to him, are really solid. I think they've had 6 straight clean sheets, and for a promoted side, that's brilliant. So it's going to be a hard game, but at the moment, there seems to be momentum certainly in the fan base. And if you could get that win on Saturday, you could really set them up for what are not a bad few games coming up, actually.
Yeah, because you've got Sheffield Wednesday the week after at Ewood, which is a tricky game. They've been playing quite well this season. But then away to Bristol City and then home to Rotherham. So, you know, certainly the three out of those 4 games, you'd be looking at them and thinking, you know, if we can win those, all of a sudden, 9 points from the 4 games, you're thinking, well, all of a sudden, it's playoffs are right there within the grasp.
Yeah, it sounds so cliche, but you do win 3 games in this division. It can transform your position. That was the thing under Gary this season. It was like one step forward, one step back. You know, they'd win one, draw one, then lose one, and it just didn't build up that momentum. If Paul can do that, I don't think we should expect miracles overnight, really, because, you know, they are where they are on the table for a reason at the moment. But if he can get a couple of wins, And as you say, Sheffield Wednesday be a tough game because they've not lost many lately, but still at home, you know, your first game in charge, you'd be hoping to get 3 points. And I say the few games after that are, I don't know if it's the right term, but they are winnable, aren't they?
One final question. What about Gary Bowyer? What will he do next? Do you think he could walk into another job in the Championship?
Yeah, I think so. I think if you look at his stock nationally, he got a very good reaction, you know, or response to after losing his job from, say, like national journalists. They were saying what a good job that he did there, because obviously they were covering the club when it was all over the place. He stabled everything down. He managed it well, you know, because it was a very difficult environment to come into. And yeah, I think another club in the Championship, maybe not high up the table, maybe he'll have to go lower down the table. But yeah, he's young enough and he's done a good enough job at Blackburn to get another job. I've got no doubt about that.
So that was Paul Wheelock, Blackburn Rovers Rovers reporter for the Lancashire Telegraph, joining us a little bit earlier on to talk about life under Paul Lambert.
We've had a lot of chats about Blackburn over the years, haven't we? That was one of the more optimistic.
I think so,
I think things are gradually getting better there, despite maybe not having a great season so far. And a disappointing season, I think, in the end last season. You've got to think about where they were 3 or 4 years ago, haven't you?
Absolutely. Can I just say as well, before we wrap up this little section, the little noise that you might have heard during that interview was the cleaner.
It was a cleaner coming in to clean the windows. So I had to communicate via some sort of impromptu sign language that it wasn't perhaps the best time to do so.
Excellent. Right, OK, so from Blackburn to another team who are looking for a new manager. In fact, well, Blackburn have found a new manager. Fulham haven't yet. And we'll switch our attention to Craven Cottage next.
You're listening to We Are Going Up. We've got the Football League covered.
So next on We Are Going Up then, we're going to talk a bit about one West London club who are looking for a new manager, not QPR, but Fulham. Kit Simons relieved of his duties earlier this month, and I'm pleased to say we're joined in the studio right now by John Norman, TalkSport's very own and a big Fulham fan. John, thanks for coming on the show. First of all, give us your reaction to the decision to get rid of Kit Simons, first of all. What was your impression of it?
Well, first off, thanks for inviting me on. Well, look, I was at Craven Cottage for the Birmingham game. Birmingham are actually a team that traditionally Fulham have done very well against. We actually sent them down a few years back in that part of our great escape under Roy Hodgson. Over the last few years, they're one of the teams that when you play against, you kind of fancy your chances. And
not this season.
Well, this is a problem.
You just described Fulham, I think, for most teams recently.
Well, the last 3 years, for sure. I think if Fulham at 2-0 down against Reading a few weeks ago, I thought that was it. You know, we came back, we scored 3 goals.
I spoke to a Fulham fan the day after that game, and I said, oh, what a game. You know, what an amazing win. And he went, yeah, but I mean, I'm a bit annoyed actually, because he would have been sacked if we didn't come back.
I could show you a WhatsApp message that I sent to my various family members and friends who are on an FFC chat ring. I felt exactly the same way. It was it reminded me of when we beat Brentford last season in the league, cup under Magat. We beat them, and it kind of kept him in the job for a couple of weeks. And long term, I'm afraid to say, and I know that Kit is a very popular man within the club. There are a lot of people within the club very sad to see him go. There's people within the club who feel it was the wrong decision. But from a fan's point of view, it was the correct decision to make. It was the correct decision to give him the job, because he started off so well. He stabilised the club. He's done a lot for the club. But was he the man to take us back up to the Premier League? I don't think so, and certainly not now. We veered from one extreme to the other in a manner I have never seen at any club. And unfortunately, the record under his management speaks for itself. We're top scorers, but how many goals are you going to concede a game? It was crazy times.
Alan Kirbishley's there at the minute looking after things, and there's reports Sky today saying that Nigel Pearson is the club's first choice candidate to replace Kit Simons. Also rumours about Steve Clark.
Steve Clark's odds on at the moment
from
the bookies.
Reading, who you were mentioning, obviously the game against them a few weeks ago. Have you got a preference out of Pearson or Clark, and what direction would you like to see the club go with this appointment?
Well, as we speak, I think Brendan Rodgers is odds on to become the new QPR boss. So odds can change very quickly, depending on who's actually just popped in for a chat with the powers that be. But yeah, it does seem as though it's between Steve Clark and Nigel Pearson. Steve Clark was a man that I would have been keen to have taken the job a year ago. So if it is him that takes the reins, and fair dues, we need somebody who is going to sort out the defence. You know, you cannot get out the Championship without having a good defence. Unless you've got a team a la Fulham 2000-2001 under Jean Tigenaar, where you've got the likes of Louis Sahar and Louis Beaumorte and Steve Finnan and Steve Malbrank, and there is serious money pre-FPP days being pumped into the club. You know, you've got a manager who can impose a style of football, which, you know, still to this day is as good a side at that level as I've ever seen. You've got to be pragmatic in your approach, and I think both Steve Clark and Nigel Pearson would introduce that. They've been there, done it. They've got the CV. They're the kind of managers that command respect, And I think that actually both would be successful. If I was to choose one of the two,
it has to be Pearson, sure.
I'd have to go, yeah, Nigel Pearson. Yeah.
I mean, because you say been there, done it. I mean, Pearson has taken a team into the Premier League. He kept Leicester in the Premier League last season in spectacular fashion with that run towards the end of the season. Left in difficult circumstances. If it was just football terms, he would have been there this season, you'd think. Whereas Steve Clarke, he's got a good reputation and he's did very well as a coach, working with Mourinho, working as at Liverpool, wasn't he, for a bit, at West Ham. But as a manager, he's done okay, but he's not set the world alight. You still feel there might be more to come from him. But I think if you're looking for a more of a sure thing, Pearson would be the one, if I was a Fulham fan, who I'd want.
I thought Clarke did well at West Brom. I mean, there is a sort of train of thought of, you know, what more could he have done with West Brom and potentially this Reading side as well at the minute.
But he's doing well at the
Pearson's
moment with Reading.
He's got a great track record in the Championship. Yeah, so I think he'd be a good appointment.
Hugely principled and top guy. That's what Richard Keyes has just WhatsApped me. And if he's good enough for him, he's good enough for me. I'll be happy with Nigel Pearson all day.
With Pearson?
Long. Yeah.
He's got the Richard Keyes stamp of authority.
He has.
What more?
He's got the top guy seal of approval.
Not a top football man, I imagine.
That's to come.
Yeah.
You've got to give yourself room for manoeuvre.
So just looking at the situation at Fulham in terms of the team that's there that the new manager will inherit, because it's gone through quite a lot of change over the last few years, very different to that team that was relegated from the Premier League and the team
thankfully
not too long before that. We can remember it wasn't that long ago that Fulham were a comfortable Premier League team, you know, in Europe and all that, and then
UEFA Cup final.
There was McGatt and there was that real overturn of players, and you know, Kit had to sort of pick up the pieces. But what's there now? What's there now that provides you hope? I mean, I suppose Dembele would be the big player at the moment who the fans will be latching onto as, you know, the big hope. But then you've got to try and hold on to them, haven't you?
Well, look, this is a problem. There's such jeopardy attached to our club. And this is one of the reasons why the decision's been made. You know, Fulham are never going to be we were punching above our weight thanks to Alfayed's money for a long time. Okay, and we're in a much better position now than we were when Alfayed took over. And under Shai Khan, you know, the money maybe isn't as hasn't been put in as much as we saw, certainly at the start of Alfayed's reign. But if we don't go up this season, then we're just going to be another Championship club. You know, when you look at Crystal Palace, they were outside of the top flight for a decade. Look at Ipswich, they've been out of the top flight for a decade. Traditionally, two clubs that are bigger than Fulham. So while we have the Premier League parachute payments of last season and this season, we have to make it count. And while we've got Moussa Dembele in the side and his contract is up at the end of the season, we've got to make it count. And that's kind of the reason why there wasn't more patience afforded to Kit Simons. It's now or never. In answer to your question, Fulham have got some top quality forward players, experienced campaigners like Ross McCormack, who many pillory for the supposed £11 million spent on him, actually was nowhere near that amount.
And he scored goals.
He scores goals, he sets up goals, and he's a team man, he captains a side. He is the kind of player you want in your team. Okay, so you've got him, you've got Moussa Dembele, 19 years old, and as exciting a talent as, at that age, as I've seen for quite a while, and will surely move on to bigger and better things. The hope is that he sticks around at Fulham, learns his trade for a couple of years before he moves on. You've got Tom Kearney, signed from Blackburn. There is a direct correlation between our improved performances and results when he is in the side and when he is out of the side. But then it starts to fall down somewhat. Suddenly then you start looking at maybe an identikit, quite lightweight midfield, the likes of Christensen and Kaczyńczyk, Pringle, you know, these kind of players on their day look good, but tend to go missing. And as you move back then, that's when the problems start to come. Bettolini, who did really well, is out injured for the season. We're on our third string keeper. We've got a new defensive lineup at the back, which has suffered injuries pretty much all season. But for me, the big problem is that defensive midfielder in front of the back four. You know, when we don't have the ball, who goes and gets it? Linking defence to attack and stemming the tide when other teams are bombing forward. Because in a team with very little in the way of pace, what teams have done to us have been quite happy to sit back, and then hit us on the counter. And we don't seem to really have an answer for that. We've got in Stearman and Ream, another new centre-back pairing, which has been mucked about because of loss of fullbacks. And there's no... And this is where the crux of the main frustration with Kit Simons came in. At no point did our defensive fragilities or frailties appear to be addressed. And he changed the personnel, but the results were exactly the same. We conceded 5 against Birmingham. We conceded 2 in the last 10 minutes against Charlton. We conceded 3 against Wolves. We conceded goals wherever you looked against teams that hadn't scored very much and weren't even in the top half of the table. And this has been a constant theme throughout this season and last. And ultimately, that's what cost him.
Just going back to Shaikh Khan, I'd be interested to know your take on his sort of reign at the club. Obviously, under Al Fayed, he had years of unprecedented success for Fulham in the modern era. And that means that there's expectation for that level to be reached again and to be sustained over a long period of time. Obviously, it didn't go very well when Shaikh Khan came in. Relegation, you know where you are. But how confident are you in his leadership that he'll even be around for, say, as long as Al Fayed was, and that he can get you back to where you were? Because I've heard a few sort of theories recently that he might even have his eye on his next move already, and that he might want to get involved in Spurs, given the NFL links that he has with the Jacksonville Jaguars and the project that's going to go in the new White Hart Lane. And are you convinced that, you know, he's really up for it at Fulham and that he's committed to this long term?
No, I'm not convinced at all, and I question why he's got involved. I mean, he doesn't, again, you know, hearing from and speaking to and reading behind the scenes, I'm not sure. I'm not sure at all. I mean, look, Al Fayed's interest waned and dropped off towards the end. He stopped putting money in. He was taking money out, as is his right. I mean, he pumped about £250 million into the club. You know, there's very few fans that sing about their chairman like Fulham do. And we still sing about Al Fayed now, even though he's not even there. You know, we love Al Fayed, but his interest did drop. And when Shaikh Khan came in with the kind of money that he paid for the club, you can understand why Al Fayed went, yes, thank you very much, I'm out of here. There's plenty of questions about Shaikh Khan. Look, ultimately, he's like any chairman. He knows the money's in the Premier League. And the balancing act for him is to decide, what money do I invest in this side to get them up to the Premier League, fatten them up, and then probably sell them. It's just whether we can do that. And if we don't, well, what then?
And as for the rest of this season, you know, depending who comes in, what would you like to see between now and the end of this season, presuming this one's dead already?
Well, look, I'm like any football fan. I still think we can go up.
I mean, look, you're 8 points away from the playoffs, which is a lot, but could be changed, you know, in a relatively short space of time. You're 12th. You're slap bang in the middle of the table. And there is a long, in some senses, you know, we're over a quarter of the way through, but there's a lot of games left.
There's a lot of games left. We've shown we can score goals. The feeling is that there's money to be spent with a good manager, sorting out the defence, which is what most good managers seem to do when they come into a club. A lack of standout team in that league. We should get to the playoffs, and we still can. From there, who knows? But there's so much riding on this season, because it's only going to get more difficult if we don't go up this year.
It's an interesting division in some senses, because you write and say there's no standout team, but we talked about this on our last episode, that the four teams at the top, if you discount Brighton for a second, Hull, Burnley, Middlesbrough and Derby, you'd have to say, if you're a betting man, and I am, you know, as we all know, not a very good one though, they're going to be in the playoffs, barring a disaster of Derby proportions last season. Brighton have started really well. Can they hold on to it? They're eking out 1-0 victories here, there and everywhere. Yeah, but they always win by one goal. Yeah. They're doing just enough. Hughton's doing a good job, but they're unexciting. But can they hold on? Possibly. Birmingham, again, probably exceeding expectations. Are they going to hold on? So you're possibly looking at maybe two, maybe one playoff spot that's going to be up for grabs for a team like Fulham. It's going to be a bum fight to get into those, maybe those last one or two playoff spots. So it could be Fulham, but it could be Ipswich, it could be Sheffield Wednesday, Reading, Cardiff, you know, Brentford, QPR if they get the right appointment next. And, you know, Wolves are certainly expected to be a lot higher than they are at the moment. So you've got to keep the faith, but of course it's going to be so, the margins are so fine that you could just as easily go up or just as easily finish 15th.
I think, going back to what I said a second ago, if you're scoring goals, you've always got a chance. If you're creating chances, and if you've got money to spend, and if you've got an experienced manager, it's going to be tough. And if I was a betting man, and I'm not, I wouldn't bet on Fulham going up this season.
I think that's fair enough. John, thank you very much for joining us. John Norman from TalkSport, big Fulham fan. And next, we're going to be talking about the all-new, what is it? The EFL.
EFL.
The English Football League.
Hashtag EFL.
We'll discuss next.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Right then, so the English Football League is going to be what the Football League is called from the start of next season. Mm. Not quite sure Newport and Cardiff fans are too happy about that decision. The governing body is undergoing a comprehensive corporate and competition rebranding. Only the fourth logo it's had in 127 years. That's incredible, that stat. And yeah, like we said earlier, it has got people a little bit riled up, the logo in particular. My favourite description of it was looking like washing powder. What do you make of this decision to
rebrand?
There's
lots of things we could pull out of this. First of all, I'd point you in the direction. I tweeted about this the other day, but we'll do it from the Wagyu account.
It's Errington.
Chris Errington, yeah, who we spoke to ahead of the Plymouth, Notts County Plymouth match, did a really good piece for his paper about this. And I think he absolutely hit the nail on the head. Sometimes, and this is the same sort of thing with issue when you talk about stadium names changing and stuff. The Football League is still the Football League, whether it's called the English Football League, the
Coca-Cola the
British Football League, or whatever you call it. It's the Football League. We know what it is. We're going to call it whatever we want, and it is what it is. But sometimes they just strike the wrong tone, and you hear this, all this kind of stuff from Sean Harvey saying that the new EFL name rightly emphasises the central role our clubs play at the heart of English professional football. But, I mean, does it? I mean, they already play. They're already there. This EFL doesn't change anything. And in an increasingly challenging global sports market, it's absolutely essential that sports properties can project a modern identity that not only resonates with their regular audience, but is also easily recognisable to a broader audience of potential fans, viewers and commercial partners.
One word for you, hashtag FL72.
And, you know, on the one hand, and this is what Chris was talking about, on the one hand they like to sort of trumpet their heritage, and rightly so, as being one of the oldest professional football league around, and on the other hand they're talking about needing to be modern and rebrand, and this whole EFL thing is trying to be like the EPL and the NFL, and I don't think it needs it, to be honest. I think it's quite ill thought out, if I'm honest.
I share those thoughts, although I did enjoy someone that tweeted, "You're all getting upset about a division which used to be called the Coca-Cola Championship."
Yeah.
So it's had its fair share of responses.
But the Championship, League One and League Two are still going to be there. That's,
well, like
that's
Chris
the
saying
same
his
thing,
it's like, is Division One the old Division Two, or is it the Championship, or is it, you know, it's all a bit confusing.
Well, they seem to have spoke to a lot of people about this, you know, a thorough consultation.
Well, I mean, I suppose that, you know, next season, if it does make a... I mean, well, is it going to make a global impact? I don't know. Maybe they think the Yanks are going to be tuning in to watch, Cambridge against whoever.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but I think they're sort of this modern thing. Oh, it's important to be modern. It's essential that we've got to project a modern identity. Is it, or are we not in an age where heritage and tradition and nostalgia are increasingly a very important and rarefied commodity? You know, we've got access to everything these days, and it's, you know, so. You know, and the it's kind of this mad social media world that we live in. So, like, I think a lot of brands that you see out there are emphasising the, you know, this kind of the heritage and the fact that we've been here for so long and all that sort of stuff. So don't absolutely,
the Football League did it
ever lose sight of that.
Years ago.
Yeah,
and they did the whole 125th anniversary, went massive on it.
One thing that made me laugh about the statement. So you've got the new logo, just the fourth in the 127 year history of the world's original league football competition. Yep.
Yeah, nice.
Each club will be presented with its own bespoke version in its individual playing colours ahead of the new season for it to retain in perpetuity.
What, the logo?
Yeah.
What, like on a piece of card or something?
So we're giving you your own version of the logo that you can retain in perpetuity, and presumably until the next time that you change the logo.
Ridiculous. So that comes into play at the start of next season.
Yeah.
Your thoughts, please. We did mention social media.
That's the thing. On the one hand, does it matter?
Does it actually matter?
Does it actually matter?
You, the fans,
do we care?
Do you care? Tell us. Let us know. can get in touch on Twitter at WAGUpodcast, or you can post on the Facebook page or go via the website and email us, wearegoingup.co.uk. So, is there anything else from a sort of state of play angle that we need to look at? It's been a while since the last show. We've already mentioned the top of the championship. That's pretty much as expected. Lots of managerial changes. Anything caught your eye in particular?
Yeah, you mentioned Huddersfield's new manager. He's been in the job for a few weeks now. He watched the match. Is it against Leeds? I think he was in the stands for the match against Leeds, but they lost and been in charge since. I was speaking to European football guru Andy
Clang.
Brassel.
Clang. Is that a name drop?
It's for a reason.
David Cameron Walker.
You know, I'm verifying the quality of the information that I'm about to give you about kind of if you knew anything about them. A lot of people have sort of were saying that it was Klopp's assistant at Dortmund. He wasn't. He wasn't Klopp's assistant. He was actually the coach of the under-23 team in Dortmund, which is more of a thing than it is over here. But very much has a similar philosophy to Klopp. So quite intense, high-pressing football that requires the players to be very fit. So the Huddersfield players might be in for some for a bit of a surprise in training over the coming months. But he follows in a long sort of line of coaches. Under 23 level in Germany appears to be something of a proving ground for managers that then go on to take control of first teams and do quite well. It's happened quite a lot recently in the Bundesliga. So I think as a Huddersfield fan, you've got to be quite optimistic. I mean, as we all like Chris Powell. And we all trot out the line that he's one of the nicest guys in football, which he absolutely is, in my experience. But there might be mitigating circumstances in terms of players being, you know, best players being sold and not having enough money to rebuild the squad, etc. But looking at cold, hard results on paper, didn't take the club forward, didn't do a very good job, really, in one sense. So this is an exciting appointment. It's not one of the same old names off the merry-go-round, is it? So I will look at developments at Huddersfield with interest from now on.
League One, Gillingham, top of the table, but it's down the bottom that it's quite interesting. Lee Johnson at Barnsley. He needs a win, doesn't he, badly? I think the worst run in their history or something.
Eight games in a row?
Yeah.
Apparently they absolutely battered Port Vale, though, at the weekend.
All right.
And they just, you know, again, as such is your luck when you're in a particular when you're in a run like that. They couldn't do it. They went 2-0 down, pulled one back, but they're, you know, they cannot get a win for love nor money at the moment.
Dumped out the FA Cup by Altrincham as well.
Yeah, I mean, he can't be long really for the job if that carries on. There's not many managers that get to lose eight games in a row and keep their job, so I think he desperately needs a win in the next game.
Wigan, 10 games unbeaten in the league. They're up to fifth. They're finding their feet now. They're only 4 points off the top. I expect them to go on and get promoted. But we somehow managed to beat them 4-0 in the FA Cup.
We did.
Which has set up a beautiful second round tie live on BT Sport Sunday, December the 6th at midday, Rochdale against Bury. Tune in or miss out. Simple as that. League 2, let's have a quick look at that before we leave you. If my page refreshes, I've got to say this is comfortably the hottest radio studio I've ever been in my entire life. Why isn't this League 2? What's going on in League 2, Dave?
League 2, well, Plymouth are still flying high.
Yeah.
5 points clear at the top now. And did you hear the story of the keeper, James Bittner? So he was the reserve keeper for Plymouth. McCormack got injured. So he made his first start in the Football League, I think it's 4,991 days after he made his last appearance, which was a substitute. So he's never made a start in the Football League. And I think he's sort of in his early 30s now. But he's just been at a succession of clubs. He's played a lot of games in non-league as well, but he's never made a Football League start in a 16-year career.
That is incredible.
Quite amazing, really. And fair play to him for holding out for so long.
Down at the bottom, four teams looking pretty much as we predicted, I think. Dagenham, Yeovil, York and Newport. Stevenage and Hartlepool both that. Caught a bit of Hartlepool late in Orient on telly on Sunday. Good win for the Hartlepool. Yeah, it was good. I was sort of
the
watching it.
Quite interesting, though. Top of this league, say for Plymouth, who are a few points ahead, but Oxford, Northampton, Portsmouth and Accrington. I don't think anyone expected Accrington to be flying this high.
That's John Coleman, isn't it?
Back
where he does things. And Mansfield as well. They're having a very good season.
They are. And Northampton to be third, sitting in the automatic promotion slots, given the troubles, you know, players not being paid and, you know, seemingly days away from administration and going out of business, as we learnt last week, is testament really to the job that Chris Wilder's doing.
It was classic Football League on Sunday, though, that they had two Football League games in a row on Sky. And off air, we were just talking about these 10 in 10 days they're doing over Christmas. you know, Sunday afternoon, perfect chance to showcase the Football League. Portsmouth 0, AFC Wimbledon 0.
Always the way.
Right, should we wrap it up there then? You're shooting off to play football, I know that. I'm shooting off to catch my train back to Manchester. If you would like to contact
us... You're going
to
make this a weekly thing then? You're going to get a train every Wednesday? Come down.
I don't think it's going to be a weekly thing. Okay. We do apologise for sort of...
Maybe if people download some audiobooks.
Yes.
From Audible. Oh, you could afford it.
Beautiful segue. Audible.co.uk/going up is... a reminder,
you need to download a lot of audiobooks, really, based on current train prices.
I haven't said that. My train was delayed by 40 minutes today, and I came down early, and because of that, because I got an advance ticket, I get half a refund or something. So it's worked out perfect. Audible.co.uk/going up is where you can find free audiobooks, download them to your heart's content. Also, the Facebook, Instagram are still there. They might not be much used, but they're still there at the minute. Facebook.com/waggypodcast and Instagram, and the Twitter as well. The website's wearegoingup.co.uk. And if you want to win 200 quid off of Amazon vouchers, perfect for Christmas. I just got my sister some Amazon vouchers for her birthday, actually. Podcast-survey.com. No, not 30 quid's worth, which I think was fair enough. Right, that is pretty much it.
Say that website address again. I think I ruined it there. Come on.
Podcast-survey.com.
Okay.
Works on mobiles. It's to do with Acast, who hosts us. So right. Go there, fill in the form. You can win some vouchers.
Can I win?
And you can help us out. I don't see why not, mate.
Good.
Don't see why not. Right, that is it. We'll be back next week. I'm not quite sure what the plan is, but certainly a lot quicker than the last show. We'll say that. That's it. Thanks for listening to We Are Going Up. We'll speak to you next time.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.